And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our websites, guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com, as well as our dedicated podcast website, ladieswholondon.com, to find out more about us, our upcoming tours and about the podcast as well. And if I hadn't completely neglected my job, to find out the spot that you can enter the competition, because I forgot to put it up last week. I will do
terrible.
It this week, I
absolutely
promise.
Absolutely terrible.
I promise. It's one job I had. And
you ripped into me a couple of weeks ago because I forgot to put something up on Instagram. And look at you now.
There's me forgetting to put the competition box up. We have had a couple of people message us in a variety of different manners saying, I want to be in on the competitions. That's fine. We've got you in there. But I promise, I will put a box up on the website.
Naughty Miss Lacey.
I've been very busy, in fairness.
You have been very busy. That's true.
But we have the competition. Do you want to tell everyone what it is, Emily?
Yes. So basically, God, remind me of the date. 9th of December, isn't it? 9th of December.
I'm checking that.
Alex and I are going to get into a little taxi and we're going to drive around for an hour or two and enjoy the Christmas lights. And we're just going to say what we see, basically. And
record the podcast as we go.
Yes, have a bit of a festive tour. And we want you, yes, you, to be in the taxi with us, with one of your friends or lovelies or whatever
well,
it is.
Well, we're not going to judge anybody. unless there's love happening in the taxi, in which case we might have an issue with it. Well,
not
we'll
into that.
Yeah, not into that.
Not into that.
But yeah, you can be there with us for our Christmas one. So the 9th of December, Emily is not wrong. The box will be up on the website as of Wednesday evening at the latest, I promise. Do pop your name in there. You just have to make sure that you can get yourself to London on the 9th of December into central London. And we will give you more information for the person who wins. So yeah, please do come and join us. And the other thing that we are organising, which is the 19th of January, going to see Operation Mincemeat at the Southwark Playhouse. Tickets are down to the last couple. So if you do think you want to come, now is the time to book.
I'm so excited for
so
that.
Excited.
It's so nice to have something in the diary from January as well.
I know,
isn't it?
Because January is really tough, isn't it? And it's quite it miserable
is.
And
quite grey. So gray. What we want is a good old war production.
Absolutely. Yes, it'll be great fun. And and then meeting in the bar afterwards.
Absolutely. A few bubbles.
Oh, fun. Yeah. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
You too.
Anyway, how are you, Em?
I'm good. I'm very well.
You've just been away.
I've just been away.
I'm so jealous.
I went on a plane.
Ooh. Where did you go?
I went to Asiago in Italy.
Very nice.
Oh, it was lovely. So, yeah, we've got a couple of friends who have family out there. So, yes, it was three couples, quite a few babies. So it's definitely a family holiday. But it was great. It was so good to get away. I feel completely revived.
Good. And did everyone behave?
Of course not.
I'm thinking more of the children than the adults here.
But oh, right. Okay. they did behave. Yes. They were all very, very good. All good. Yeah, it was lovely.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I've been chugging along. I went to a pickle festival on Saturday, which was great fun down in Deptford. The 25th annual pickle festival with our lovely friend and colleague, Russell, who some of you might know. It was great. It was bonkers. People had made pickles and there were about 150 jars of pickles and chutneys and jams and things. And we all went along and ate some pickles and some cheese and listened to some fantastic live music and then went home full of the joys of autumn.
What? Great. And in terms of the pickling, was there anything that was pickled that you've never seen pickled before?
Grapes. Pickled grapes.
Pickled grapes.
Which were surprisingly good.
Oh, you dived in, did you?
Mm, yeah, I did. You couldn't try everything because there was so much, but the pickled grapes were particularly good. Russell's one, I think, was an absolutely blinding
well I'll tell you
pickle.
What I've got a jar of it.
Have you?
I've got a jar of his pickle lily.
Oh my goodness. I haven't got that,
I got it
Russell.
for my birthday. He texted me today actually asking if I've had any. So, I mean, I guess that means that it's ready to be opened. So,
It was very nice, so I highly recommend
oh,
tucking in on
lovely.
that. Right, well, before we get on with the podcast this week, it was the first time we've changed it up for the podcast pedestal. Super exciting.
So we have changed it up and we asked you, yes, you, what you thought was the cruxiest point of the story. And last week we spoke about Dick.
Dick Turpin, to be precise. Yes.
Richard
And
Turpin.
I have to say, I mean, it's funny because it sort of makes us real or made me realize how tricky it was to pick.
So yes, you've had quite a few comments. So Big Red for Show on Instagram, loving that name, Big Red for Show. hiding in the chimney and buying drinks for everyone was probably my favourite part of this story, but I'd say the teacher recognising his handwriting was the crux.
And that does seem to be a pretty popular one, actually. It does seem to be that, the handwriting is the one that everyone seems to have gone for. We've got here someone under the name of Hat Scarf Shirt says, "I'm sure it's a fave of many, but the handwriting on the letter seen by the old teacher." So this does seem to be something
Yes.
that's gone through. Have you got anything else that's
Anyone
that's cropped
else
up?
says, so traveling Shan, for me, it was the fact that he was essentially caught because his brother-in-law wouldn't open his letter as he didn't recognize the address. I just love the idea that even back then, people would be screening their calls. Yes.
It's the kind of medieval version of call screening, isn't it? Which is fantastic.
Definitely.
Lexi says the teacher recognizing his handwriting, what are the chances? And
Yep.
Shelley said the teacher recognizing his handwriting with a kind of little sneaky face of, oh yeah, exactly, a little something dodgy going on. So I think we can probably say that it is a thumping win across the board for the handwriting giving him away. Do you think?
Absolutely. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, very
Thumping. Thumping
democratic.
win. Absolutely. So those that went for that, we will tag you on a post this coming weekend.
Absolutely. Yes, we will. We will. Thank you for joining in the fun. There was quite a few people that voted for that, so definitely the most popular. But it shows how sometimes there's one very clear winner, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, there we go.
So this week, Emily Dell, where are we heading?
We are flicking through the pages of Piccadilly.
Pages of Piccadilly. Yeah, because it landed in Piccadilly last week and you have gone for, well, something that was a request, actually, wasn't it?
So somebody asked if we could talk about kind of famous bookshops in London. So I am going to start with one based in Piccadilly, and then I'm going to talk about a couple of other ones.
Now, but it's funny because when you say, oh, bookshops, you think, oh, that's not necessarily hugely fascinating. But oh my goodness, there are some really unbelievable bookshops in London, and I guess you're starting probably with one of the most famous, given that you're on Piccadilly, which is Hatchards. I think you mentioned that last week, didn't you?
I am, absolutely. So Hatchard's bookshop, have you been?
I have because, well, first it's a gorgeous bookshop, and do you ever get that thing when you go into a bookshop and you just think, I know I'm never going to read everything, but I want to buy every book
There's
because
just something about it, isn't it?
there
Just being
really
surrounded by
is.
books. I think it's the way that it's presented.
Yeah.
Just the idea of having a book in your hand or having a book in your tote bag. There's something really cozy about it.
Agreed.
Yeah,
And the, you know,
definitely.
and this one is one that has the seal of royal approval. So
Not just once, I'd
not
like to
just once. I
say.
will
Not just
tell us more.
once. So just to describe the outside of this bookshop, first of all, it has almost kind of like Dickensian vibes, you might say. It's got the colours of kind of like forest green, light wood. You've got a central door, huge windows on either side. You've got Hatchards, which is kind of glistening in gold above the door. And then above that, you've got two little kind of gold royal warrants, but there is actually more than two, but I will talk about that.
And before we go on to that, it's the kind of shop that a lot of people just walk in front of and don't always see. So where can people find it? Where's the best kind of.
So it's on Piccadilly. The road itself, which used to be called Portugal Street, named after Catherine of Braganza from Portugal, a little hark back to the Twinings tea episode.
Absolutely.
And people generally miss it because it is right next to Fortnum and Mason's. And especially this time of year where you've got the bonkers, like absolutely incredible Christmas display in the window. So yes, it's just next door. Just
quite
next
a
door.
Modest front, isn't it? So you can miss it quite easily, unless you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. 187, if you want to be precise. 187 Piccadilly.
There we go.
Yeah, there you go. Now, when you go in, straight away, you see this beautiful kind of staircase, and it kind of curves around, and you can kind of see elements of like just kind of different corners and little kind of cubby holes and areas. It actually takes over 5 floors, and you've also got a basement. And when you go down there, you feel like you've just been transported and you're not in London anymore. And, you know, the sound and the energy of Piccadilly is suddenly gone. And you're just surrounded by all of these pages and people being quiet. Because obviously, if you are in a bookshop, it's a bit like a library. You feel like you have to be a little bit kind of calm and gentle as you move around. And on that note, as you move around, you're either walking on the creaky floorboards or occasionally you're walking over this really beautiful olive green carpet. Which
is so atmospheric, isn't it?
It's so nice. It's really, really nice. And then, of course, you've got all the colours of the book fronts and the hardbacks. And I find that people that work in bookshops tend to just be really relaxed as well. And I think it's the vibe that they're picking up.
I mean, there's no stress, is there? I can't imagine anybody has ever gone into a bookshop and, you know, like really panicked, just desperately sort of, you know, life or death, you know, this everything depends on it. I can't imagine that happens regularly.
Well, I was actually in a bookshop today, funnily enough, buying a book for my godson. I won't say which one it is, just in case they listen. But Carmen was kicking off and I was like, you know, that person. It was like, oh my God! Trying to stay calm. Anyway. When you go in to the left, you'll find a portrait and you'll find a portrait of John Hatchard, who is the man who actually opened the bookshop in 1797, which is such a long time ago.
Yeah.
He was not only a publisher, he was also an anti-slavery campaigner.
Hurrah!
Hurrah for John Hatchard. Yes. So late 1700s, obviously quite a crucial time in terms of that. And now it was originally at 173 Piccadilly. And after just 4 years of being there, it became this huge business. Like everybody knew about it. Everybody wanted to go in. And it was just massive in terms of the retail book trade. And he really got a name for himself. But in the early 1800s, it moved to its present site, which is next to Fortnum and Mason's. And that is because the original shop needed to house the Egyptian Hall.
Ooh.
Have you heard about the Egyptian Hall?
Not at Hatchard's, I haven't, no.
So this is at the original Hatchard's. So commissioned by a man called William Bullock.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
No relation to Sandra.
No, I think so. And it was the first building in England which was influenced by an Egyptian style, if you like. So there were exhibitions there, artwork, kind of Napoleonic relics, all sorts of different things. And they used it for lectures and magic and spiritualism.
Ooh.
Yeah, it actually became known as England's Home of Mystery.
That sounds exciting.
It does. I think this might be one for another day. I'd quite like to do a pod all about, I don't know, kind of magic hotspots or kind of, you know.
Pop it on the list, babe.
Pop it on the list. Pop it on the list. Now, anyway, it all started from a man called Simon Vandenberg, who basically gifted a huge collection of merchandise to John Hatchard to start this bookshop. So he started to sell lots of books from this man who was from the Netherlands. His family were all involved in kind of book trading.
Okay.
And yeah, he was quite well known for having quite a few books which were controversial. I don't know in what sense, but and I don't know what would be controversial in the late 1700s.
Oh, goodness, but... anything could be controversial then, really, you know.
Yeah, but... true.
So, you know, ankles are good or something like that. Very yeah. controversial.
Yeah, if there was an ankle
is rubbish
on the book cover. God, burn it.
Absolutely.
Now, I mentioned John was a publisher. He first launched his publishing career with a pamphlet, which was called Reform or Ruin, Take Your Choice. Ooh. And if you saw this on the front cover, it said, every man may learn the true state of things at this time and what that reform is, which alone can save the country.
Ooh. Yes. So he's a bit of a political, you know, political hot potato.
Yes, well, Hatchard himself, he was quite conservative, evangelical, if you like, and quite a lot of the books that he was trading in or working in terms of publishing, were connected to the Church of England.
Okay, so when this other guy comes in, is Hatchard still around or is he gone by this point?
Oh, no, he's still around.
He's still around, okay.
Sugar. Sorry, I just nearly spilt peppermint tea all over the shop.
Oh, Twinings.
Not Hatchard's, I'm not actually in there. It was a Twinings, actually.
Of course it was.
Okay, I'm just going to leave that to drip everywhere. And quite a few famous people went in and purchased books. William Wilberforce, for instance. Oh. I mean, we were talking about...
famously anti-slavery as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Fronting the abolishment of the slave trade. Hannah Moore, who was quite a well-known poet... playwright. She was kind of in the circles of Joshua Reynolds, Garrick, Johnson. Yeah, Lord Spencer, who was the secretary in the Ministry of All the Talents.
Is that the Ministry of Britain's Got Talent?
That's actually a thing. So from 1806 to 1807, it didn't last long for him, but he was the secretary for the Ministry of all the talents.
What's that?
I have no idea. No, you need to look into that.
So
quite a few kind of political people, writers, lots of people wanted to be in there. And I believe that it didn't take over five floors like it does now, but it was seen as quite a huge bookshop at the time.
And clearly quite important with all the... Yeah. I mean, clearly there's some sort of... abolition bent to it, because you know we've got Hatchard himself, we've got Wilberforce going there. I mean, maybe not necessarily, but I would imagine.
Well, actually, also
a...
Hannah Moore, she wrote a poem called Slavery at the time of William Wilberforce,
in support of abolition, I would assume.
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, so clearly there's a little bit of an abolition movement going on. Maybe they'd meet there or something. Who knows?
Yeah,
exciting.
Yeah, maybe. I love this. So in the Edinburgh Review, there was a piece of writing in 1810, and it basically describes a Hatchard's visitor. And it says, a set of well-dressed, prosperous gentlemen assembling daily at the shop, well in with the people in power, delighted with every existing institution and with every existing circumstance.
Oh, so this it's a movers and shakers place, clearly.
Very highbrow.
Yeah,
yes.
Very much so.
And to the point that the books inside Hatchard's were sold to royalty. Queen Charlotte, for instance, who was the wife of King George III. And this brings me on to the warrants. And we spoke briefly about warrants before. Twinings Tea Shop had a royal warrant, which was gifted to them from the royal family. They have three. One was from Her Majesty the Queen. One was from the late... Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh, and one was from Prince Charles.
So yes, they've got all three, because it's quite a coup to collect all three royal warrants, isn't it?
It is.
And there are some places that obviously can't, like, you know, a barber's or whatever. It's quite tricky to collect all three, but Hatchard has got all three. And so how many, they will have held quite a few over the years then, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. And if you want to get up close to a royal warrant, it's actually quite hard, because they're usually just above the door. But because there are three in Hatchard's, you've got two above the door and you've got one which was from Her Majesty the Queen. behind the till. So when you go in, it's just to the right and it's at eye level. So you can get a really good look at the detail and, you know, what's on there. And it's so weighty. Not that I lifted it, of course. I wasn't like, excuse me, do you mind looking over there for a second? Whee!
try and run out the door with it.
Yeah, get my hammer and chisel out. It's actually here with me now.
And just in case people don't know what the Royal Warrant is, can you explain what that means?
So if you have been serving your goods to the royal family for a particular number of years, then you will receive a royal warrant. I think you need to do at least 5 years in order to receive one. So in terms of where the royal family get their books, it would be from Hatchards.
Hatchards, yeah.
Yeah. There's also a table. It's called Oscar's Table, as apparently Oscar Wilde used to frequent this shop quite a lot.
Oh, really?
It was his favourite bookshop, apparently. And he used to do kind of like a book signing and would sign his books on this table. So that's quite lovely.
Wow. That's rather nice.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? And when you go around, it is a bit like a mini museum. So there are lots of things on display, which will tell you a little bit about the history of Hatchards. There are pictures of the front of Hatchards in the middle of the 19th century. So you can see kind of how it's changed. And there's also a shop receipt dating back to 1815.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Whereabouts can you find that?
So you can find that basically to the left of John Hatchard's picture. So okay. When you go in to the left, you've got the stairs kind of weeping round and going up. Just to the left, you'll see it's like in this little kind of glass case.
All right, fabulous. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Mm, yeah.
That's rather fun.
John Hatchard, he died.
Oh, no.
I know.
Very unexpected.
At the age of 80, though, so he had a good life. And there is a memorial to him inside St. Paul's Church in Clapham.
Oh, is there now? Yeah. Is that where he's buried as well?
Yes.
Was it just in the attic of the bookshop?
Yeah, it's there somewhere. The resident ghost.
Yeah, fantastic.
Now, they do also have another one, Hatchards. They have one in King's Cross. They opened it in 2014, and it was next to the Fortnum and Masons in King's Cross Station, which is lovely because, you know...
Buddies!
The buddies, but... It's not so lovely anymore because in 2019 they had to move to a bigger store.
Oh,
so
well, good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them.
And do you know if that store there, they have the Royal Warrant on show as well?
I doubt it because just I don't think it's duplicated.
Just in the main store, the headquarters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just in the headquarters store. Interesting. Maybe there's a little picture of it.
Yeah. Or like an etched thing. I think you can do the etching type thing, but yeah.
Yes, possibly. But... Yeah.
And if you do want to get up close and personal to one of the Royal Warrant badges, there are a few places where you can. If you go into Charbonnel and Walker, the chocolate shop, there's one on the wall there that you can see really easily. And some of the older ones are on show in places like Lock & Co, Lob. So some previous kings and queens are on the walls there. Again, the current ones are sort of up above the door, most of them. But Charbonnel and Walker, you can get quite close to that one, which is a very nice chocolate shop just off Bond Street.
Lovely. And yes, they have all sorts of events going on. They've got a really nice kind of Christmas customer evening where customers can go in and they can meet a lot of this year's best authors who are going to come in and sign books for people.
Amazing.
And they've also got a podcast.
Have they?
They've launched two episodes. The last episode was on the 31st of August, and the one before that was in 31st of October, and the one before that was August. So I'm hoping that it will continue.
They're gonna have to play catch up if they're gonna keep up with us.
Absolutely. What are we on? This is our
61st.
Oh my god. Anyway, I'm going to leave Piccadilly now.
Okay. Where are we heading to next?
And we are heading to Gaze the Word.
Oh, okay. Where is that exactly?
So it's quite close to Russell Square. If you're aware of the Foundling Museum.
I am very aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too far from there. If you want the exact address, it's 66 Marchmont Street.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Gaze the Word. Did you say that you've been in?
No, I have not, but I do. I mean, I've heard of it. I do know what it's a little bit about what it's about, but I haven't been in.
So it's the UK's oldest LGBT bookshop.
Wow, okay. Amazing.
Now, this bookshop is certainly not on Hatchard's kind of size. It's a teeny tiny bookshop. And when you look at it, it's got kind of a pale blue facade. You'll see Gaze the Word just above the square window, and bookmarking, if you like, the word, you've got two little red triangles.
Okay.
And it was opened in 1979.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's very well known for selling books and also promoting human rights.
Fantastic.
Opened by kind of three people, quite instrumental for the opening of the bookshop: Ernest Hole, Peter Dorey, and Mark Ashton.
Okay.
Peter Dorey in particular, he was kind of the front runner, if you like, and he was inspired by similar bookshops that he found in New York.
Oh, I see.
Yes. The name itself is named after the Ivor Novello musical Gaze the Word,
okay,
which was first opened in the 1950s in Manchester, I believe,
right,
and then eventually came to London.
Okay.
And it's now under the guidance of Jim McSweeney and his assistant, Uli Lennart.
Okay.
But originally, when they wanted to open, I mean, this obviously in the 1970s, Camden Council, which is kind of like the borough, if you like, or the council for the borough, completely rejected it and didn't
really
want it at all.
Mm.
But
I mean, I suppose that's not surprising for the 70s, although
for the 70s,
you know,
yeah,
things were starting to change by then. But
yeah, but I
enough.
Mean, they did have the support from Ken Livingston.
Oh.
Yes, yeah, so he kind of pushed it forward. So it did actually go ahead and open. But about 10 years later, 1984, the store was raided by HM Customs and Excise. This was dubbed Operation Tiger. And they basically seized thousands of pounds of stock, all sorts of different books that they believed was kind of indecent material.
Oh.
Yeah, and charges were brought to staff, directors. They thought they were... they basically saw it as a pawn shop.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they were taking books like The Joy of Gay Sex and The Joy of Lesbian Sex, but they were also taking books and poetry by people that were gay. So it was totally, you know, a homophobic act of,
wow,
you know, seizing material and, you know, basically getting them arrested.
Yeah.
But there was so much media coverage over this and so many people questioning, you know, why are you doing this, that in the end the charges were finally dropped.
Good.
But I mean, for quite a while, whenever they closed the shop, they had to put shutters down because they were so worried about their windows being broken.
Really? Oh, mm. So awful, isn't it?
And actually, I think is it 2015, 2016, the London riots?
Yeah, when was that? No, I can't even remember when that was.
It's around that. I think it's a good six, seven years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had their windows broken then.
Did they?
Yeah, but, you know, the next day, the people in the area and the people that would constantly go to the bookshop were so kind of shocked by it that they gave money and said, look, please take this money so that you can sort out the window
wow,
you know, any damages. Like, there's such a huge community and so much love for this shop. It's,
that's so
it's crazy.
Lovely.
Well, it's not crazy, but... it's just really, really nice. And there is actually a blue plaque above the door, which
ooh,
commemorates the group's co-founder, the activist Mark Ashton.
Okay.
Mm.
So I assume then he's no longer with us, because blue plaques only usually get given out when somebody's died, after they've
yeah,
died, quite a while after.
Yeah, exactly. And you can find all sorts of books, books on history, politics, travel, poetry, queer theory, queer history, advice about people coming out. And it quickly established itself as this hub, this place where people could go to feel safe,
mm,
which is really lovely. And I think people still, you know, have that today.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, by the sounds of it, yeah, the kind of community feeling for it is obviously very strong and still very much present.
Yeah, and there was a cafe there initially, basically because they didn't have enough books. They didn't have enough gay material, either kind of material on the idea of being gay or written by gay people. But then eventually they had so many that they had to close the cafe.
Oh, really?
No longer there. Yeah.
My goodness.
I think that was in the 1990s when they closed the cafe. And there's been lots of groups. So people would meet up there. You'd have the Irish gay people in London group, black gay group, lesbians and gay support for the miners group.
Quite a big instrumental group, actually, when the miners went on strike, weren't they?
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if you've seen the movie Pride.
Yes, I have. Very good movie.
Yeah. So this came out in 2014 and it really kind of introduced the shop to people. And this film...
Oh, is that the shop that they went and met in? Is that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I hadn't realised that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the movie is all about the miners' strike because the gay activist, Mark Ashton, he basically realised that police had stopped harassing the gay community because their attention was suddenly elsewhere on the miners' strike. So without really thinking, he suddenly kind of created this this fund, if you like. It was called the Lesbian and Gay Support for the Miners, and just basically got a collection together and raised lots of money for them. And I think by doing that, it kind of showed the miners, who I presume were mostly, you know, straight men, the support that they had from the gay community and vice versa.
Other people who were, sort of undergoing oppression, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm really ashamed to say that I hadn't made the link between that film and that. And of course, the lead character is Mark Ashton, isn't he? In it.
Yeah.
I hadn't
yeah.
made the link between the two. There we go. If you haven't seen that movie, it is fantastic. I really recommend it. Very good British movie. Really, really good. Yeah.
Peter Dory, who's now passed away as well, and the co-owner Ernest Hull were also part of a group called the Gay Icebreakers. And this was a socialist group, and they basically ran a helpline. So if anybody had any worries, you know, in terms of coming out or how they felt about themselves, how they felt about other people, then they could ring this helpline to the shop.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's lovely to see communities like that coming together, isn't it? And and creating the safe space that is needed.
Absolutely.
Good on them. And to hear that it's still going strong. And
Really strong. I mean, there was a time, and I guess when it comes to bookshops, when you had people that were starting to, listen to podcasts or listen to, the e-books. Then it's a massive worry, isn't it? But I think suddenly we've got this new generation of people that actually really want to physically hold a book, and it is almost quite fashionable, really, to be seen with a book, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I do a lot of listening to books of late, just purely, very simply, because I was always a massive bookworm. And then I did the Blue Badge course and we had to read so much that it's actually broken me for reading. And I can't seem to read for pleasure. So I tend
really?
To listen.
It's
one of my biggest regrets is that I'm so happy I did the course, but it's broke. And I used to read, I used to have like several books on the go, and I was known as a bookworm and, you know, all that kind of thing. And it broke me for it. So I'm doing a lot of listening to audiobooks as an attempt to try and get back into reading. But when I do read, I want a physical book. I don't want a Kindle. I don't want any kind of, you know, PDF on my iPad. I want a book. There's something.
No, I want a physical book as well. Yeah. There is just that kind of turning the pages and just having it in your hand.
Yeah. So very pleasing about it. The smell of an old book. Oh,
the smell,
so
especially if it is, you know, because I get quite a lot of books from secondhand shops.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that they've been in so many different people's hands, and, you know, everybody's had their own different feeling about characters in the book or, you know, a particular synopsis.
Exactly.
And especially if, like, you know, people have written in a book as well. Like, I find that fascinating.
Yes.
People have done their doodles or dedicated it to someone. It can be really romantic, actually.
Yeah. And I love that thing of when you have a book, especially obviously if it's a novel, not so much of a factual book, but you create the whole world in your head. You know what they look like. You know what the place looks like. And then almost when people do it as a movie, then half the time I don't want to watch it because it's in my head. I know what it looks like. And that's my version of it.
Yeah.
And I love that because it's your own private sort of image of it.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because whenever you're reading a book, you have a particular, straight away, you've already formed that visual of that particular character.
Yeah.
And you put the book down, you pick it back up again, and immediately it's that image again, isn't it, that you've created within
Absolutely.
That, you know, maybe first couple of pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, let's hope that my love of reading comes back, because I would love to have that back.
Yeah, definitely. So any money that is made as well, I should say, goes back into the shop,
Oh,
straight
wow,
back
okay.
into the shop. Yeah, purchasing books, and it's such a cute place as well. Every little nook and cranny is full of something, whether that's posters, whether that's flags, whether that's buttons and badges, just books piled on top of books. And as I say, it's not huge. They do have book signings and they do have a couple of events there, but it's something quite nice about kind of being back to back with someone, you know, as you're kind of sifting through and, you know, seeing what's
Yeah,
new on the shelf.
absolutely.
And they also won an award in 2018, the Attitude Pride Award.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So there we go. That's Gay's the Word.
Brilliant. Where are
And
we going next?
we are now going to go to Marylebone,
Oh, very
number
nice.
83 and 84 Marylebone, which is the Daunt Bookshop.
Ah, very famous.
Yes.
Yes.
So claiming to be the first custom-built bookshop in the world.
Oh, interesting.
So it takes over two shop fronts, a little bit like Hatchard's. It's got kind of a dark green colour, pink granite, curved windows. And it's quite famous for the interior because you go in and you've got this long oak kind of galleries that go above you. This
It's
is long.
incredible, isn't it? Dawn
Yeah.
books, so
And
beautiful.
the whole ceiling is kind of like one gigantic skylight. So you've got so much light beaming through. But you've also got kind of these cozy emerald green lights that kind of hang above as well. One wall is bright turquoise. You've got these round tables in the middle, and a really nice little feature, you've got these William Morris prints wallpaper.
If anyone doesn't know what William Morris prints are, pop it into Google. They're kind of really lovely sort of floral prints. I mean, some people love them, some people don't like them so much, but they are very kind of traditional and arts and crafts style. They're really pretty, yeah. So it kind of
They
works very
are.
nicely with a very British
Yeah, lots
feeling
of
to what Dawn is.
flowers and kind of swirly patterns and
Yeah.
petals.
Lovely.
Yeah, so you can buy these prints and they're just right in the middle. Yeah, so it's got a lovely atmosphere. And the Marylebone branch was the first, but there are actually nine Daunt bookshops
That
now.
many?
Yes, they're not all
Wow.
called Daunt,
Okay.
but they are owned by them or opened by the same company.
Excellent.
Now, in 1860, there was a bookshop where the current one is in Marylebone, which was selling books mainly on theology. And this went on until 1908 when a man called Francis Edwards, who also lived above the shop, purchased it and also sold books with the emphasis on travel, topography, and maps. And it was
Okay.
actually called the Francis Edwards Bookshop.
Right.
And this is where he got the architect, a man called W. Henry White. Do you know anything of his?
No, I don't think I do.
No, I think he
Should I
did
know some of
quite,
that?
no, I don't, he did quite a few houses around Marylebone, quite a few interiors.
Okay. Do you know, of all the places in London, Marylebone is one of the ones I know the least, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was
Beautiful,
quite,
but
really beautiful. He was quite well known for his Queen Anne style.
Right. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and basically Edwards, you know, embarked on this no expense spared attitude. And what he created, or what he asked W. Henry White to create, is still what you can see today, which is what I described in terms of these long galleries and this glass ceiling. A place where you just want to spend an afternoon on a rainy day
Yeah.
and hear the tipper-tapper of the rain kind of beating off the glass on the
Oh,
top.
it's
And
lovely, isn't it? It really
yeah.
is.
Yeah, because
It's
even
the
though you've
kind
got
of
so much light, it's
I
so
always think of
warm.
it's a little bit like the what's the Liberties of bookshops in a
Yes.
way, because Liberties, the department store, is known for just being this beautiful kind of wooden, again with a lovely sort of skylight roof and that kind of thing. And I feel like Dawn is the bookshop version of that.
Yeah,
It's one of those ones
definitely.
that always pops up on most beautiful bookshops in the world, that kind of thing. It's gorgeous.
It is. Lots of people have drawn it. I really want to draw it actually.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of bookshops, but I really want to do Daunt. Now, above the door, you can actually see the date that W. Henry White designed the interior, or, you know, was the architect for it. And that is 1910. And you can see that above the three kind of arch windows just at the front.
Okay.
And the shop remained with Francis Edwards and his family until the 1970s, when it was bought by Pharaoh's Books in 1982, which was when, for a little while, it was actually known as Reeds of Marylebone High Street.
Okay.
So it was
so actually, it hasn't been dormant for very long.
Oh, no, no, no. So it was Francis Edwards for most of it. Before that, as I say, it was a little bookshop, which was just kind of selling books on theology. It was quite teeny tiny then. Mm. And then it was Reeds of Marylebone. And then in 1990, it was taken over by James Daunt, who was a former banker.
I thought the Daunt name went back longer than that. Goodness me.
No, there you go. And he expanded it into two shops then. So at that point, it was just one shop.
Right.
And he, well, there's kind of like a nice little nod to him because he was a former banker. When you go in, you can find this huge walk-in safe. I mean, you can't actually go in it, but you can tell that it's a safe. And apparently it's where they used to keep expensive volumes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know what they keep in there now.
I mean, probably still that. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. So there's still a focus on travel. Mm-hmm. And it's arranged geographically. So any book to do with America is in the America section or Africa section or Asia section. So this could be guidebooks, phrase books, travel writing, food, history, fiction, wow. Anything goes in its relevant country, which yeah. is quite interesting because in terms of people watching, it's quite fun as well because you'd be like, oh, I wonder what that person's doing over there in America.
Yeah, because most bookshops would do it in sort of, you know, you have a section for food, it'd be everywhere in there, and then a section for travel writing. And so it's actually quite nice to do it on the country. And I suppose if you're looking for inspiration, if you think, oh, I'm going to Peru or wherever, and you head to that section, you'd be like, oh, actually, there's a few more things here I might fancy.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Love it.
So as I say, they've got 9 stores now. So they've got branches in Holland Park, Cheapside, Hampstead. The one in Kentish Town is called the Owl Bookshop, but it was bought by Daunt Books, but basically retains its name. Okay. And the first one out of London was in Essex, Saffron Walden, which is named Hart's Books. And you can also find one in Marlow, which is called the Marlow Bookshop.
That's creatively named.
Exactly. And even though, I mean, I have been to all of them, but I've looked at images to see kind of like the interiors. Mm. And you can tell there is something about it in terms of its kind of coziness that it is under Daunt Books.
Definitely. And I think that's, you know, you often see people on the tube with a tote bag that says Daunt Books on it. And you're like, oh, they know their bookshops.
Yes.
It's sort of, it's that thing of, oh, look, yeah. But it is lovely. It's such a gorgeous, it feels a bit like, it's not quite as cozy as Hatchard. It feels more sort of, I don't know, almost like a big library, like a reference library type thing.
Yes, there are more chairs.
Yeah, and it's much more kind of spacious and almost more impressive, really, which kind of always makes me think of the Liberties Link. But yes, it's not quite as cozy, but it is just phenomenal, beautiful, beautiful shop.
And it certainly encourages you to sit down.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they have lots of events. I mean, actually, Daunt actually hosts its own book festival, the Daunt Book Festival, which is held annually in spring.
Oh, wow. Did not know that.
Yeah. And they have events every couple of weeks. So, for instance, when this goes out, because obviously Alex and I, we record this a little bit before Wednesday. Well, the day before.
I mean, this week it's 3 hours before Wednesday.
It's currently 20 to 10 p.m. on Tuesday. But so tomorrow, which is the 17th, they have kind of an event where Claire Finney, who is the author of The Female Chef, which is a book that she's just written and it's just been published. And it's all about the imbalance of professional kitchen gender. So all about kind of how Michelin star chefs even now, you know, tend to be mostly men, and she's written a book all about that. Gosh. So she's talking about that. £10 for the event. And then on the 23rd, you've got Mark David Bayer. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's written a book called The Ottomans. And while he's there, you've also got James Barr there, who wrote a book that I absolutely love. I don't know if you've read it, The Line in the Sand.
I have not read it, no.
He also wrote Lords of the Desert. So it's all about kind of the struggles around the Middle East in the 20th century. So you can, you know, find these events on their website. And
I think what we'll do is the show notes as well, which will be at the bottom of your, wherever you're listening. Click on the link. It'll take you to show notes and we'll put a link in there so you can go to the events page of these places as well. So
yes,
and see
absolutely.
Pictures of them as you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I'll do that. So then I've just got a couple of teeny tiny ones that I'm going to talk about. One is very teeny tiny. It's called Word on the Water.
Oh, I love this bookshop.
Yes. So Word on the Water is very close to Coal Drops Yard. It is on the canal. It's on the Regent's Canal, so quite close to King's Cross. Mm-hmm. And it's on a boat. It's a Dutch barge, which is about 100 years old. Very rustic, and you look at it and it's just full of books. You've got plants, you've got musical instruments. Sometimes you see people actually performing on top of the canal boats, mm-hmm. which is great because it gets your attention even more. And there's a sign that tells you that the bookshop entrance is this way, which will take you into the canal boat itself, which I don't know if somebody, I mean, I guess somebody sleeps there.
I don't know.
Because you wouldn't want to kind of leave that, I guess.
Well,
but when you go in, it's quite...
more than anywhere else, I guess.
It's quite hard to tell where they would sleep.
I can't imagine they'd sleep. So many books. I can't imagine they'd sleep above the shop on that one. Mm. Imagine you just look that up.
Yes. Yeah. But the magical thing is, though, that you can actually go in. So it's the whole entire thing.
Gorgeous.
And along the Regent's Canal, in certain places in London, they have these canal boat markets. There's one over near Victoria Park, and it's lovely because you can go into the canal boats and kind of get that taste of what it's like to be on one and then purchase goods. And with the Word on the Water, you can actually sit and just read and, you know, bob up and down on the water. It's lovely.
Fantastic.
Mm. And before they secured a permanent mooring, they actually had to move every 2 weeks, which I'm sure was a little bit problematic in terms of people trying to find them.
Yeah.
And even more dramatically, the barge nearly sank about 7 years ago.
What?
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but apparently it nearly flooded. And
oh my goodness.
Yeah. All the books would have got a bit soggy. Yes, so they also do talks. They run talks on politics, art, feminism, mostly in the summer or, you know, when it's a little bit warmer, because most
talks,
of these talks...
Are they in the boat?
And no, they happen on top of the boat.
Oh, on top of the boat. Oh,
on top of the boat, yeah. And on Twitter, this is how they kind of describe themselves. A floating bookshop, great books, friendly parrot, warm stove, poetry slams, live music on the roof.
Yeah.
Isn't that lovely?
So tell me more about the parrot, because everyone's going to ask.
I don't know much about parrot. I don't know. Yeah, who is this parrot? I'm not too sure.
I've not seen the parrot, so...
Yeah, it wasn't there when I went.
No, me neither.
I'm not too sure.
Well, we'll have to do some rummaging there, won't we?
We will. And they do have another shop as well. The owner or the creator of the Word on the Water, Francesca Wilkins, she opened a bookshop in Margate.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Which is, Margate's been having its own resurrection of late, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the last little one that I want to mention is actually it's a shop. I don't know if I can really kind of class this as a bookshop, but I just love it so much. It doesn't just sell books. It sells all sorts of memorabilia. It's called Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Okay.
So do you know it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. So it's number 14, Cecil Court, which is basically nicknamed Booksellers Row, Cecil Court.
I do know the street, yes.
Yeah, you've got about 20-odd secondhand bookshops. It's paradise if you are, you know, really into your secondhand books.
I've just remembered where it is. Yes, I don't think I've ever been in that shop, but it's next to Marchpane, isn't it? Which is the famously children's bookshop.
Yes. And it's wonderful. It's established in 2012. So, you know, it hasn't been around for too long. But they basically have memorabilia and rare editions of Lewis Carroll's stories.
Wow.
There's artwork, first edition books, stationery, there's anything to do with Alice, basically. It's all Alice related. And you can just get some really beautiful books with these gorgeous pictures. And they kind of get things from eBay and have lots of different rare things. For instance, they've got a chessboard which was painted by the man who actually did all the illustrations for Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, okay.
John Tyniel. I've probably pronounced that wrong. Tyniel. I always do.
he doesn't listen. It's fine.
No, that's true. He was also the cartoonist for Punch magazine. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And they own quite a few things that are in different museums around London. There's a couple of Alice in Wonderland pieces that are in the V&A because they've just recently had an Alice in Wonderland exhibition, haven't they?
Yes, so, they have. And there was a chessboard as part of it. So I don't know if that was the same one. If they loaned
maybe,
it.
Maybe so then, yeah.
Because when you said that rang a bell because it was beautiful, really, really gorgeous chessboard that was there. Interesting.
Yes. So you might want to pop in there or just have a little walk down Cecil Court because, yes, it is book heaven.
It really is. It's all rare editions and out of print this and that and the other. And it's fantastic. Yeah, Cecil Court is a must on the book lovers' pilgrimage tour of London.
Definitely. And we might not know who the parrot was on the barge, but in the Alice in Wonderland bookshop, you do have a white rabbit called Harley.
Oh, yes, an actual white rabbit.
An actual white rabbit.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
We should do a podcast on all the different animals, the pets around London, because there's quite a lot.
Good, yes.
Quite a lot around.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So there we go. That's our little
fantastic.
Trip.
A lovely little trot through some of the most famous bookshops in London. Do you have a favourite?
Oh, I would have to say Hatchard's. I just love the cosy atmosphere, especially around Christmas time, because they put lots of Christmas decorations in the windows. They have space to have a big tree as well.
I have to go with you on Hatchard's. I mean, I do love Daunt books, but there's something about the history of Hatchard's and the, I don't know, it's just, I do love it. When I've taken guests in there, it does feel like a bit of a hug in a bookshop, which, yeah. And for Christmas, like, you're right. It's lovely for that. It's, Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much, Emily. Well, I hope that has
you're very welcome.
You know, fulfilled the criteria of whoever it was that wanted bookshops in London. And I mean, there are loads of them, but I think you've picked some of the most historic and the best stories for those ones. I particularly like the receipt in Hatchard's and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's 200 years old. Amazing.
Yeah, I'll put some pictures up.
Yes, so do follow the show links, which are in the description of your podcast, and that will take you and show you some pictures of all of these places. You don't have to bother Googling them. You can just pop on there and they will all be on that spot. There we go.
Podcast Pedestal.
Podcast Pedestal this week. It is over to you again, listeners. It's time for you to tell us what you want as your most important bit of the podcast.
Yes, it could be absolutely anything. It could be the description of one of the bookshops. It could be the architecture. It could be anything.
And let us know if you've been to any of these bookshops as well. And if you've got, personal links to them, or you have a particular one that you love, or one that we've not even mentioned as well today, please get in touch and let us know. And we'll read out your comments on next week's podcast.
Absolutely. Even if it's not in London, your hometown, if it's got a particular bookshop that you really love, we'd really like to hear about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we get to the Wheel of Destiny, do we have any kind of parish notices that we need to give out? Apart from the entering the competition.
Yes, that is a big parish notice. Please enter the competition. We want you to be in our taxi. And as I say, you can bring a friend or, whatever you want. I say whatever you want. It could be a family pack of Mars bars. It's up to you. So yes, please do put your name in.
Yes.
And other than that.
And you're still drawing?
I am indeed, yes. Let me know, guys, if you want me to. Yeah, absolutely. If you want me to do any drawings for you, any Christmas cards, Christmas presents.
Oh, yeah, your Christmas cards always go down very well indeed.
Thank you very much.
Family all got them last year.
Just message me on sketch_history.
And this week, well, next week coming, the 27th of November, I have a public Westminster Abbey tour. So if you've always wanted to go to Westminster Abbey, but you've never done it, or you want to go around with a guide, this is your opportunity to come around with me. For a fraction of the cost of what it would be for a normal private tour, it's £35, and that includes the £25 entrance into Westminster Abbey. It's at 11 o'clock on the it's at 10 o'clock on the 27th of November, and we've got some spaces left, so please do come along. I don't know if I'm going to run one of those again, so this is probably your only chance, possibly only chance, we'll see. And then the Christmas lights tours. Now, the first one is sold out, the 4th of December is sold out, the 19th is close to selling out, and then we've got 21st and 23rd. So if you want to come on one of those, get your name down at quick sharp, otherwise you might miss out.
Excellent. And this is such a lovely time to go to Westminster Abbey as well, isn't
it? Yeah, it's so nice, and it'll be really quiet, which is fantastic.
The Wheel of Destiny.
So it is your favorite time of the week.
Wheel of Destiny.
Yes.
So,
now, we've been having quite a
feeling?
Few requests in, so I'm hoping that we can start to cover some of those off, because some of them haven't yet popped up on the wheel. So, actually, you've done a couple of requests. Well, last week, this was a request this week, wasn't it?
Yes.
Which is great. So I'm hoping that we'll get something I can pick this week. So give it a spin and let's see what happens.
Oh, well, I mean, the people at home don't know this, but we have actually added a couple of new ones on the wheel, and it's landed on one of the new ones, which Ooh. Is the Royal Docks.
Oh, which was a request one. So that's good. That's really good. Fabulous. So we had a request about some history about the Royal Docks, and there's a lot that we could do. The one that I had on at the top of my list for Royal Dock stuff is, now I'm going a bit dark at the moment, the Silvertown explosion.
Ooh.
Do you know about this?
No, I do not.
No, you don't. Okay. It's quite a big deal for this area of London, because you know that the Royal Docks are slightly out to the east, and they're sort of an area in their own right, and they get a little bit forgotten sometimes. So when stuff happens there, it's often quite big locally, but this one was a very big thing that happened, and affected the whole of London. So we're going to look at the Silvertown explosion, which happened at the start of the 1900s.
Boom, boom. I'm into it. Literally.
So that's what we're going to be looking at next week.
Excellent. Well, I very much look forward to that.
Absolutely. Well, listen, that's it for this week. Thank you all so much for coming. We really appreciate it. I know we've got a few new listeners of late, which is wonderful.
Hello.
Thank you for coming along. And please, 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 if you get a second, do go and give us a rating on iTunes. We'd love some more 5-star ratings. That would be amazing. It helps us get out to some more people. So that would be wonderful. Yeah. And tell your friends. Tell your friends to come along. And if they like, you know, little bits of London history, tell them to come and hang out with us.
Definitely. And also let us know what you want us to talk about.
Yes.
It's really lovely, you know, getting those messages for particular requests, even if it's not something specific, but it's an area of London.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah. And we'll figure it out from there.
Great.
It's your podcast, people.
Yeah. It's not ours. It's yours.
It's officially yours.
We are your ladies. What do you want us to talk about?
So there we go. Thank you all so much for coming. We will see you next week for a bit of explosion excitement.
Fabulous.
See you then. Have a great week.
See you next week, guys. Bye. Lots of love.